It's now or never. It's today. This is the deadline for players that have been offered the franchise tag to either sign a long-term deal or to play the entire NFL season just on the one-year franchise that's in front of them. The question is, we've seen a couple of guys over the last 24 hours in general get paid. What's it all mean for Dak? Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM Channel 80. I'm Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic. Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all of our guests are on the Shell Penzel Performance Line. And guys, all eyes are rightfully on Dak because we've heard the conversation for months, but let's be real here. This is, at least according to all the reports, Dak wants a short-term deal so he can get back to the market. The Cowboys want a longer deal. Now you've suddenly hit this spot where so many people have said, why negotiate till we're in the 11th hour? Well, we're past the 11th hour at this point. There's only a few hours left. And if you're the Cowboys, you've got to face the very real possibility that you're looking at 4 years or 1 year and then having to dip back into the draft. That would scare the hell out of me if I ran an organization like the Cowboys.
Well, sure. I mean, this is now a roll of the dice. Dak Prescott sat very, very much on what he wanted, wasn't giving in. The Cowboys weren't giving in. As Adam Schefter reported, there's no plans, talks for today, and today is the last day, so he's going to play for $31.4 million. By the way, the largest cap hit in the league this year will be Dak Prescott. And if he goes out and has a monster year, here we go. You know, Cowboys, you're gonna agree then to go to the shorter deal for him, or you're going to go to the franchise tag again, which would be in the area of $38 million if the cap stayed the same. So he's betting on himself by holding fast on his line of, I want a shorter deal. If that, again, was the big sticking point, which we believe was one of the big sticking points, there's always a few things that he is betting on himself to say, I can go out and play well and put myself in a good position again next year.
Imagine the maniacal laughter. Dak Prescott, who I believe almost tossed for $5,000 last year. Yeah. If all of a sudden you're staring down a similar situation and the Cowboys make the playoffs, and God forbid the Cowboys win a playoff game, and you have all the success that you could have wanted with this offense that you loaded up weapons for, a defense that you've added some solid parts to, and now you have to walk back into the negotiation room with Todd France and with Dak Prescott and just watch them laugh in your face as they throw ridiculous numbers at you that they know they can command because now they gotcha. Like, that's the scenario you've put yourself in, because at the beginning of all this, you weren't, like, you had a value in mind that is clearly below what the rest of the public thinks of Dak Prescott, right? Like, that's where we're at with this.
And then there's the other side, though, if he doesn't play as well, right? I mean, that's out there as well.
But I guess it's like, if you're the Cowboys, you're rooting for him to do well. So in the ideal world, right, for the Cowboys, you're in a brutal spot with all this, because you're not going to...
That is 100%
like,
correct.
That's the tough part, I mean, for the Cowboys is you're rooting for the season to go well, because now also you might only have him for a year or two. So you based, like, Super Bowl or bust, Dallas Cowboys. Because if you don't, you're going back to the drawing board potentially on the most important position in football. Well, what a world.
And going back to the drawing board on a team that's incredibly talented. So, I mean, I'm a believer that even if Dak is bad, that the Cowboys are still going to be at least a decent football team. They might not be great. Even if Dak has a down year, it's not like Dak down year leads to Cowboys first overall pick. Like, I can't find the math to that. They're too talented everywhere else on the roster. So now you're suddenly saying, hey, are you willing to let Dak walk for what could be the 18th or 22nd pick in the first round that, you know, that you'll be using?
I'd say 85% at least said we don't have a problem with it.
I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, I didn't know where. So
firing sound at will.
Yeah, we're just firing it. So
13 days.
So the upside, the upside for Dak is monstrous. The downside. So what's the downside for Dak? Let's look at that. So he plays poorly. I know the team wants him to do well. We all sit there and want our favorite team to do well. But let's look at reality. Say he has a bad year. Okay, just say he does. So what happens then? Then the Cowboys say, see, he's not going to be our quarterback. I'm sure they don't feel good if the year doesn't go well. And they let him go. Or let him do his thing then. Let him become a free agent. At the very least, he signs still a pretty damn big free agent deal somewhere else, right? He's still going to get maybe not the monster deal he wanted, but he is still going to be cash happy in all of this. He's just playing now for the fact of being, you know, getting a monster deal. the low end for him, outside of an injury, the low end for him from the financial side, if he plays but doesn't play as well, is still a free agent deal from some other team for a hell of a lot of money.
Well,
or with the Cowboys for maybe closer to what they were looking for than what he was looking for.
Either way, a longer term deal, they wouldn't, because it wouldn't be the tag again, I wouldn't think. And a longer term deal at maybe not as much money, then he would be to the point, okay, I would have to lower my expectations a little bit, but still would be a heck of a lot of money.
Well, and as was pointed out earlier by Lewis Riddick, I mean, he's scheduled to make about $31 million this year. If they were going to franchise him again, a la Kirk Cousins, he'd make about $39. So you're talking about, this is the Kirk Cousins discussion all over again. Any deal conversation with Dak starts at the first 2 years, better pay him more than $70 million. Otherwise, just keep doing what he's doing. I mean, there's sort of a spot here where the Cowboys have backed themselves into a corner, and it's a reminder why right now you're seeing the early contracts on Myles Garrett and the early contract renegotiation on Patrick Mahomes. Like, you want to get ahead of this stuff, because eventually if you're backed in a corner, the check you have to write is going to be substantial.
So real quick, for those that may not remember, Kirk Cousins did 2 years at the franchise tag for Washington. I think it was 20 and 22 or 22 and 20. It was right in the area for the 2 years. He made like $44 million.
He's the only player to ever play on the tag twice.
And then, so he made the $44 mil and then signed the fully guaranteed $84 million deal with Minnesota. So in basically, he would guarantee himself $128 million right in that area off of the 2 years of tag and that deal. Kirk Cousins, I mean, who is
off a couple years of years of 500 football. Let's call it what
you
it
can
is.
Like Kirk Cousins all you want, but never has Kirk Cousins been in the same sentence of one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Right? He's a good quarterback, not so good at times, good at other times. $128 guaranteed million dollars he made over those few years.
Betting on yourself at the most important position in football with that ungodly amount of leverage can be a place that's very lucrative. It's one of those spots where you sort of reverse the flow on the franchise tag, which normally is this market suppressor for so many guys that players have come to hate since its inception, when it used to be a good thing when you guys were first coming up. And now it's this thing that quarterbacks, maybe in limited instances, are saying, all right, you know what? I can use this to stick it right back to you.
ESPN Cowboys reporter Todd Archer was on, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, one of the most remarkable shows in ESPN radio history. First Take Your Take. It's on every day from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern for 13 days. Kevin Connors was on yesterday. Dak, they talked about whether or not Dak playing on the tag even matters.
It matters because you want to know who your quarterback is, not only for, especially when you have one that's been successful, and as statistically good as Dak has been in his first 4 years, you want to have some certainty at that position, not only for 1 year, but going forward. And the Cowboys have never been in this position with a quarterback in their history. So, you know, they've been in this position with Dez Bryant in 2015, where it got down to the true deadline. But now you're in a situation where quarterback is different than a receiver, because this is the guy. And the Cowboys believe he's the guy. The fact that we're now on, let me just guess here, maybe it's 17, 16 months since they first started talking, and we're now at 2 days before the deadline. What's really going to change?
Well, here's where I disagree. The Cowboys don't believe he's the guy.
You know what? I mean, thank you for saying that, because that's been the argument that a lot of people, some like us included, have been making since the beginning of this, which is they don't love you like that, Dak, would have been done.
It's exactly right. We all thought he should have been signed. We all thought and think he should be the quarterback of that team going forward. But again, just like the draft, when we think this team should take this guy, it doesn't matter. It's all about what that team matters. And they're not in love with Dak. It's very evident.
Jeff Schwartz just tweeted this out, and it's worth reminding people. Mike McCarthy admitted he didn't call Dak for over a week after getting the job. That was the giveaway they aren't 100% in on Dak. You couldn't spare 5 minutes to call your franchise QB after getting the job. You had to discuss how you'd use Dak for most of the interview. Everyone knew, this was his follow-up tweet, everyone knew Cam Newton was out in Carolina when Rivera got fired, but Matt Rhule still called him the first day he got the job. Like, it's things like that. You got to look at the way it's treated and all this, because that creates an environment where stuff can get done. Because I get people are going to point out Dak and the length of the deal, and that being a sticking point for the Cowboys. Guess where else length of a deal came up? Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Length of the deal was a thing there in a different sense entirely, but it's one they could come to that was mutually beneficial because the organization and the player knew that the other had their best interest in mind. That has been demonstrated over and over again in this situation with the Cowboys, that that's not in the case in the way that Dak or some, a lot of us in the outside world think should be in this one. The Cowboys look at Dak and they got a number in mind, and it's below what Dak has in his mind and what a lot of the outside world values that quarterback.
And then both sides are going to go through this year, and then that, and then that, that, that level is going to ebb and flow until it finds its level at the end of the year, when one person is going to be smiling more than the other.
I think there's this allowable section in my mind, because I hear what you guys are saying. I've been caught up personally on the 5-year issue. Like, why would they want to go into business for 5 years with somebody if they don't love them? But I do think that there are levels of love, right? Like, there's this, if you are on eBay and you're bidding on something in general and you're like, oh, I really like that, but you have a top price you won't go over, you know, that's different than when it's the item of your dreams and I will pay whatever price. It feels like the Chiefs and Mahomes went into this negotiation with, I will pay what, like, what do we have to do?
It's going to work. We're going to get to a number. Right.
And there is a difference in, while I think that they make it clear, if it's true that they want him for 5 years, that they believe he can be the guy. But they also do, to your point, make it clear that it's not this love language, like obsessive, I'm going to run into the room and have to be with you. If they're willing to let 1 year or a few million dollars separate him.
And I guess I'll say I'm wrong with only one person smiling at the end of it. If he plays great and the Cowboys go far in the playoffs, I'm sure, you know, Jerry Jones will be smiling too, well, knowing he's going to have to pay the guy and knowing Dak played that well and now he's going to get the big contract, but he played to the point where now we love him a little more.
Exactly, and you know what? That could be the point where it is mutually beneficial, right, again, when we say, all right, you know what? Without a shadow of a doubt, it took us longer to realize it in that situation, because part of it is also, and Dad, you know, this is how you come to these things. Your draft status is always something that just kind of hangs in the ether.
That is a 10th rounder.
Well, look at the way that Dallas has dealt with their last two quarterbacks. A lot of us didn't think that Tony Romo should have been ousted before when Dak Prescott first got there. But he was. And Tony Romo, for all that he had done, there were still a lot of doubts about Tony Romo in big moments. Tony Romo, who was an undrafted free agent at one point in time. And I get, to a certain point, you overcome that, but in a sense, you never outrun it. And with Dak Prescott, you found a guy in the fourth round. And you, let's put it this way. And we, Jason, you and I were talking about this before the show. It is the time old thing that we go back, even with Brady. If you loved him like that, he wouldn't have lasted till the fourth round.
Right.
That's just not what you do, especially with that position. And so you found a guy in the fourth round that outperformed everything that you could have thought, but there's still what you initially thought of him. And that, for some reason, like in this situation, I struggle to believe that if Dak Prescott had been a quarterback they had taken in the first round, we're dealing with this
already
in the same way.
I agree with that.
And now, granted, I understand there's differences there with you know, the fifth-year option and all that stuff.
Right,
would have been in play. But I'm saying, sentiment-wise in here, organizations deal differently with their first-rounders than they deal with everybody else. That's just the way it goes because of the value you put into that at the beginning.
There's also a money thing, and a friend of mine in business taught me this years ago. If you're hired in at a certain rate, at some point you have to leave the company you're with to really take a meteoric jump, because they'll look around and say, hey, we're already taking you from here to here financially. If you want to take that next leap, a lot of times you have to move companies. To your point of a first rounder versus a fourth rounder, when you're coming into negotiation, you're saying, well, you've only made this much in your career, now we're offering you this. I mean, that jump feels so huge,
that percentage of a jump,
right? Is it not fair, though, to look at all of this and say, if they're not all in, if there is not a love relationship to that level, what the heck were they doing with Andy Dalton? Like, was that really the best option? I mean, if you're Jerry Jones and you're not sure you've got the guy, you didn't want to at least kick the tires on Cam? Or, I mean, it was Andy Dalton really the smartest pick? Because they are looking at a realistic scenario of going into next year with nothing at quarterback.
I think the situation with Cam gets skewed by the price tag that we saw New England now able to steal him at. Because that's what happened, is that was highway robbery for the rest of the league, looking around and letting Cam Newton go to that team for that price on all of this. Because we assumed Cam Newton, a former MVP and a longtime starter in this league, would have commanded more. And at the time, I can understand, you're trying to potentially work out a long-term deal with Dak. You're not going to bog down any more of your cap than you already have with other contracts, bringing in a quarterback like that. So I sort of understood operating out of the bargain bin then, when I thought, all right, the long-term deal was still realistic.
And they can do it next year, Jason. I mean, if Dak doesn't work out for them, Cam's only on a one-year deal in New England, a team you know doesn't pay a lot of money. And Dallas, if they really feel they wanted him, would if they wanted to lure Cam there. So they could essentially get him next year if they wanted to.
That is interesting to me. I just keep looking at it and saying, and you're right, we assign some – in some ways, we're assigning the deals to this. But if I'd gone into the offseason saying, hey, I'm going to give you the choice between Cam, Andy Dalton, Jameis Winston – or whatever the best quarterback available is in the draft in the middle of the first round, where would you have put Andy Dalton? Like, I understand that we've underappreciated Andy Dalton. Going to the playoffs for the Bengals is a reason to turn around and say, hey, he's been a successful quarterback. But of all of those options,
I think maybe at that point you still thought there was a chance you could get the long-term deal done with Dak, and then you'd have Cam as the backup. I don't know if they would have wanted that situation where they would just want a reliable guy in Dalton who they knew was just going to be the backup. Maybe it was that route. Well, I don't know.
I mean, hell, at that point, too, they were still trying to sell us on the idea that signing Andy Dalton wasn't a shot at Dak Prescott. Like, you have some plausible deniability when it comes to Andy Dalton. You sign Cam Newton.
Yeah, then,
we all know you're gunning for Dak's job at that point. Yeah. Like, you want to talk about an ugly patch of negotiation.
Yeah, that would have been
a sign a player of that caliber while you're trying to negotiate a long-term deal with your supposed franchise quarterback, and let me know how that one goes over with Todd France and company.
If you're Andy Dalton and you get a year scot-free in this offense to just learn it, study it, and, you know, get yourself right, you're on a team stacked with weapons. I mean, can the Cowboys, in anybody's mind, if they go into next season with Andy Dalton as their starting quarterback?
No shot.
No, they ain't doing that.
No shot.
All right, that was fair. Listen,
it's a question to ask. I get it.
And it's not a slight on Andy Dalton.
No.
Like, I mean, it is, unfortunately,
it is
a slight, but
look at the money
they
built up to have the weapons around on both sides of the ball. It's not going to be handed to Andy Dalton. I don't believe it'll be handed to Andy Dalton.
Handed to Andy Dalton or handied Andy Dalton?
Handied Andy Dalton. Handed to Andy Dalton.
Handied Andy Dalton.
I'll be most interested to see if, given the number of weapons they have, if they believe, even if they're a middling first-round team, can they just put in another rookie quarterback deal? Because that realistically, monetarily, what would make the most sense for the Cowboys is to roll the dice on 1 year, you play with Dak, and then you dive back into the draft. I just personally think it's a nervous proposition to me to say, I'm going to hand over a Super Bowl caliber roster to a rookie quarterback that we got with the 24th overall pick.
Here's the thing that I want to see, because then what he'll be saying and smiling, if Cam has a big year in New England, if Cam has a big year in New England, he signed the deal. He wasn't getting much more. He's betting on himself, the one-year deal. And if he has a big year, that's going to be – is there any doubt? He'll be the highest sought-after free agent quarterback next year, right? You know, who else would it be?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that would be it. If he has a good year, he's a young quarterback. If he shows the injuries haven't really affected him, he gets used well in that offense, that's going to be the guy people are looking at.
Can the Patriots just – well, I mean, in the Patriots' mindset at that point, do they just franchise him? I mean
– look what it's going to cost you. Are they looking for that nut on a
quarterback
on a cap number? No.
Yeah, I would say if the Patriots ever been willing to do that at the quarterback position, very rarely in this option.
Yeah, that is a fair point. Golic and Wingo reminding you that 30 for 30 podcast in association with ESPNW presents its latest season, Heavy Metals, inside the Caroli Gymnastics Empire. The 7-part series tells the story of Bella and Marta Caroli, the coaches who brought women's gymnastics in the U.S. to absolute dominance on the world stage and also enabled its greatest tragedy. Listen now to all 7 episodes of Heavy Metals inside the Caroli Gymnastics Empire on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, any
that
of these deep dives.
Oof, yeah.
That'll be interesting to see. Also interesting to see a little conspiracy theory from me.
Oh, boy.
We saw Madden rating change. All right, we saw Madden rating change at the running back position. And for anyone that hasn't seen, we've been slowly getting the Madden ratings position by position. And what do you know, a couple of days ago, we get the ratings out, and Saquon wasn't necessarily given the highest rating, and Giants fans were absolutely up in arms because I think they gave him an 88, and you know that didn't rank him high enough amongst running backs. And what do you know, a couple of days after the ratings came out, the Madden ratings adjuster adjusted Saquon to a 91.
It's amazing how they adjust those things, isn't it, when the complaints go off?
So you're telling me that they spent months and months and months working on the game and tweaking every little nuance and making sure they have all the ratings just right. They release the ratings, and then a couple of days later, Saquon pops up to 91. I'm telling you, this feels like a click grab. It's an attention grab. You put out a rating that doesn't make any sense. As a result, the Madden community goes nuts. Then they fix the rating. Everybody's happy.
Let me ask you a question. You want the game to sell?
Yes.
Okay, appease the customers.
I mean, what better way to build hype right
That's
now?
That's what this is, because listen to what we're talking about. A video game and rankings on a video game. But I mean, listen, I know how big it is, believe me, but that's what we're talking about, and people get so up in arms. Why wouldn't you, if you're putting that game out, appease those customers so they'll buy that game?
Did you, knowing that you were a sack master on Tecmo Bowl, did you play a lot of Tecmo Bowl?
I did not play a lot of Tecmo Bowl.
Did you ever have to block the Tecmo Bowl ratings adjuster for rating you too low?
I was just going to say, I cringed when ratings came out of different games that I was on, just knowing where it was going to be. The only good rating I'd have if there was ever a rating of Run Stopper, because that's what I did well. Everything else, eh.
My favorite rating category was, well, I have two. One is they rated everyone. You get real detailed in the ratings if you go and look at them. They gave everyone a rating for their spin move, even offensive linemen, really? Which is always incredible. But my favorite by far was awareness. Your awareness rating, because you would see guys with awareness ratings in like the 30s and 40s. And I was always like, does that mean I go out in the field without like my helmet? I forget a cleat going into the game. We sometimes just randomly punt the ball. Like an awareness south of 50 indicates to me that I might not be fit to go out on the field and operate in a way that's safe for my health or anyone else's. So I don't know exactly what point you're trying to make with that one, Mr. Ratings Adjuster, but I don't know if I take too kindly to it, friend.
Well, and a lot of people mock athletes for being sensitive about it. Not me. I mean, look, no matter what your job is, if somebody came in and arbitrarily made a video game about spreadsheet making and suddenly you realized that Janice down the hall had twice the rating you have, I don't care what you do for a living. If you take any pride in it at all, you are going to be fired up about a ratings adjuster. And if somebody had ever done that in the music world, where all of a sudden, like, the first thing I'd be doing is looking at every fiddle player and be like, wait, we're going to have a conversation.
Anytime someone puts a number rating on what you do, like, think about, we make up and get ticked off about the dunk contest. Like, I'm here shouting because Pat Connaughton got jobbed at the dunk contest because we assign number ratings to the stuff that happens and all this. And the minute you do all that, hell, that's the reason, like, I don't know how, like, gymnasts and figure skaters and sports, where all of it is based on this numerical scale in that way, deal with that. Like, a number judgment off the way that you are living your life in that field. No. That's hellish. Leave my awareness alone.
I'm back to the Tecmo Bowl rankings. At one point, I was the 43rd ranked defensive lineman at 57%.
You know, but you still wrecked havoc on the game, though.
43rd, though. That's pretty good. Like, there's a lot of D linemen in the league.
43rd. Bruce Smith was number one at 91%. Reggie White, number two at 82%. Tied with Howie Long at 82%.
Oh, Howie, what Long year is so this?
I don't know.
They clearly must rate it differently. Like, this percentage indicates they're grading it almost like a report card. Listen, because again, how these guys wouldn't be 99.
This is in
insane.
The 80s or early 90s. Understand the ratings.
You know what? I'm still mad about it.
Yeah. I am stunned at that. Reggie at 82%.
If there's any one thing I'm certain of, if they ever did a video game of sports broadcasters, my reading rating would be about a 12.
Here's your Sports Center update. Players Association in the NFL has requested financial backing from the league in the event that the players decide to sit out the season. Among the requests in their recent proposal included opt-out clauses for at-risk players to receive their salary, accrued benefits, as well as a $250,000 stipend guarantee to all the players who do report to camp in the event that the league is shut down in response to COVID-19. Staying in the NFL, we've talked about it all morning, Myles Garrett is now the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL. He has 2 years left on his deal, his rookie deal, signed a 5-year extension for $125 million. So the total is 7 years, $144 million, beating the $141 million for Khalil Mack. The 24-year-old has 30.5 sacks in just 3 seasons. Houston Rockets star James Harden is now with his team, kind of, at Walt Disney World in the bubble. He came there 5 days after the team flew to Orlando. Rockets have not discussed a reason for Harden's delayed arrival. And they'll also be, remember, without Russell Westbrook, who tested positive for COVID-19. Harden now must go through the initial quarantine period in his hotel room. On this date, July 15th, 1993, Cal Ripken Jr. hits home run number 278 as a shortstop, breaking the record for the most at that position. 3 years later, Ripken moved over to third base, ending a streak of 2,216 consecutive games at shortstop.
SportsCenter is brought to you by Blue Emu. Maximum pain relief works fast and you won't stink. It's pharmacist recommended odor-free pain relief for muscle pain, backache, strains, sprains, and even arthritis. There's no stinging or burning involved. It's simple pain relief. Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief works fast and you won't stink.
It's Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. I'll admit I'm a little shook right now. Mike Golic Jr. just basically took a sledgehammer to a tiny spider.
There was an ant or a spider crawling.
No, it was a spider, and it's a spider,
big. It's
a big
ridiculous biggin. Crawling toward Mike, and he got up and booted it because thinking it was going to attack you. It's a million times smaller than you.
It was coming right at me, and so I thought I could sit there and I could let it assert its dominance, or I could get up and remind it who Daddy is.
The fact that you're so proud of it now really makes me rethink.
It's
like,
over there stunned. It has no idea what to do.
Oh no, it's dead.
No, it's not dead for any like anyone listening. It's definitely not dead. It's just stunned.
Okay. I'm
it's nicely napping over there.
I really thought all these years I could run my mouth in any bar as long as I had you next to me because you'd catch my back. Now I'm seeing that.
You see what I did?
Yeah,
you see how I protect you, Jason?
I don't know.
Well.
I'm a little weirded out by it.
There's no doubt Rachel Nichols just hung up.
Rachel's out.
I'm so sorry, Rachel.
Rachel's like, I thought it couldn't get any worse than the bubble. Now I'm dealing with these idiots.
She's done.
Let's go to the Shell Penzo Performance Line where we're joined by Rachel Nichols of The Jump. Rachel, I'm sorry. Spidergate had to take over the beginning of this. But
how are you, Rachel?
Dude, I've been trapped in my room for 3 or 4 days now into the 7-day quarantine I'm in. This is entertainment for me. Keep going. I got nothing.
I'm telling you,
I got nothing,
Rachel,
else.
You're better off than the spider right now. So, all good.
You mentioned, for anyone that doesn't know, you're in Orlando and you're at the beginning of the quarantine process now, almost to the halfway point. So walk me through a little bit of what this is mentally like to come in and then be so quarantined and really be so isolated in Orlando.
I mean, obviously, it's just something that not only I have never stayed in one room for 7 straight days. And I just, you know, when they were first telling us about this, I was like, right, but you guys are going to let us like have an hour to like walk around outside, right, or something. And it was no. And then it was like, well, you can go walk to get, you'll be like escorted to go walk to get your daily COVID test because you need to have 7 negative results in a row before they let you out into the bubble. And then when we got here, they said, actually, we've changed the procedure. The tester is just going to come to you. So that's it. You are in the room for 7 straight days. I've never experienced this before. Sunlight does not, you know, make its way onto my skin. And you just hang out. You start to kind of lose all sense of time. I'm a terrible, like, night owl anyway. So now it's, you know, now all bets are off. All permission is granted, right? Because the clock is almost irrelevant. And you just do it.
We're going to get into what you're doing to pass the time because we've talked to Malika Andrews and she was in your position and Mark Spears, who has a real issue going on with his video game system right now. But as far as what's going on in the bubble, it all seems, Rachel, I mean, I know we had a couple of guys inadvertently do things wrong and got re-quarantined, but it all does seem to be, or is that what, at least what you're hearing, at least from the outside looking in, the bubble seems to be working right now.
It is. And, you know, they've had a couple positive tests, even once guys got here, too, to be in specific. But that is, again, in the system, like in the net of that they designed. They sort of designed these multiple layers of a bunch of testing of these guys when they were back in their home markets in the 2 weeks leading up to coming here. And the idea of that is if guys just were walking around with it and didn't know it, they could get isolated and start to get treated if they needed to or anything like that. And then also to just make sure when you were getting guys on the plane, you weren't putting positive guys on the plane with other guys. Two of the 300 plus players sort of netted out of coming in with it on the plane. And we know the way this virus works now, it can be, you know, you could have been infected 3 or 4 days ago and have a positive test not show up for a few days. So that is likely what happened. But they were tested here, and while they were still within their single room quarantine, those positive tests were identified. And then since then, they've certainly not reported that they've had any. So, you know, knock, knock on every piece of wood until the day the last ball drops, you know, through the hoop in the last day of the NBA Finals. But for right now, things seem to be working, and that giant rule book that you guys played Malika talking about in the intro is there for a reason. Seems like it's working so far.
Rachel Nichols with us here on Golic and Wingo. And working so far is probably the operative term. We know we've got to wait, but in right. general, I'd imagine there's a fair amount of anxiety going into this situation for everyone. And I'm curious, from the players you've talking to people that have been down there already, have the normalcy of basketball starting to take place again helped dissipate any of that?
Yeah, I think for sure. I think this is, you know, this is what everybody has done every day for their entire lives. And the fact that you're getting to get back into it, whether you're a player, whether you're a coach, whether you're an athletic trainer, you know, this is what you do. And especially if you're a basketball player, it's such a big part of your identity, right? Who's he? Oh, he's a Milwaukee Bucks player, right? Who's he? Even just in your neighborhood when you were growing up, who's he? Oh, he's that player who does this. Being a player, being a basketball player, is who these guys are. It's the reason why a lot of times when they retire, there's that year of sort of crashing and depression that a lot of players have, because who they are is just intrinsically changing. And I think for these 4 months, a lot of these guys haven't been able to be who they are in the world, and now they can start to be that again. And that is really, from a mental health standpoint, helping while they still manage the obvious physical health and issues that are coming up here.
It's Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio. We're talking to Rachel Nichols from The Jump. She's down in Orlando in the bubble. And so, Rachel, you mentioned some of the practice and the element of getting guys back together. When you start looking at the fact that players haven't been able to practice themselves in some instances, not just as teams, what kind of basketball are you expecting when we actually see guys get back onto the court for these games?
I mean, it's not going to be great, but also sometimes that can be pretty entertaining. I'll give you the Washington Wizards this past season were not good at playing basketball, largely, which is a shame because that is what they are supposed to be doing. But they were wildly entertaining. I think one of the scores of their games was something like 160 something to 150 something. I mean, there are versions of basketball that, while not clinical displays of the beautiful sport as it should be, are still fun. And I do think that's what we're going to see. I think that there will be a lot of sort of fun moments. I think that these guys will appreciate playing in a way they might not have as a random game in March if those games had continued. And I think that while there will certainly be some teams in these first 8 seeding games that they're going to have that will be sort of, you know, biding their time for the playoffs or doing the things that we always see like elite teams doing in the final 8 games, right? They're kind of resting players. They're not, you know, they're maybe playing for seeding, that kind of thing. There is going to be a scrap among sort of the middle and lower teams, both for seeding in the Western Conference, where a team like the Houston Rockets could finish as high as 3rd or finish as low as 7th, which is going to make a huge difference in who they play. And to get into the playoffs, we know in the West, they've got 5 teams here that could make that final slot. We could have a play-in game, which we've never had in the NBA before. So I think there's going to be a lot, even if it's not going to be, at least at the beginning, the most elite level of conditioning and gameplay. And I think you will see a lot of funny, stupid, crazy stuff. But who says that's not fun?
Rachel Nichols joining us, brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. It's road trip season. Get ready with 5-Hour Energy. So, Rachel, you're down there. We talked to Malika Andrews when she was where you are now, being quarantined, and she said she Zoomed with family members and played scramble. We talked with Mark Spears, who, outside of the vat of wine he brought with him, he forgot a cord to his gaming system, so he's bummed about that. That was to bide his time. What are you going to do to bide your time as you're waiting?
I brought a puzzle that I think I have to just admit I may have bit off more than I can chew. I started that with a glass of wine two nights ago. All right, so I was like, let's go in theme, right? I'm coming down to Disney, and I got a puzzle of the Disney villainesses, right? So all the like female villains from Disney movies are in a puzzle. And I was like, this is perfect. I'm going to be locked in my room for 7 days. Like, this will be a great way to like just sort of unplug and like have my brain work in a different way. And it turns out I'm not that good at puzzles, guys. That's just what I have to admit about myself. So I've done some at home, like with my, I have young children, but I got maybe some false confidence there, because those puzzles, it turned out, were 4, 7, and 8-year-olds. And then when I had an adult grown-up puzzle, it's not good. It's just not good.
Self-realization can be a tough thing, huh, Rachel?
It really can. You've got to like just come to terms with who you are in the world, and this has been a little bit of a come down for me. I'm not going to lie.
Rachel, I still believe in you. I believe that you're going to have an 11th hour awakening where in the middle of the night you're going to wake up and the puzzle's all going to make sense. The whole thing's going to come together, and it will be your great triumph of the fall.
Be so, a great moment.
There we go. Rachel, appreciate you coming on, and most importantly, stay safe. We genuinely appreciate your insight from the bubble, and love that you're down there, but obviously stay safe, and we appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. Thank you so much to you guys. And I just want to say, not the first nor the last person to say how much I've appreciated this show and everybody who works on it. And as the ESPN radio goes through its metamorphosis, I'm just really grateful and appreciative for all the time everyone on the show has put in.
Thanks, Rachel. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Rachel. We appreciate it.
Go Look and Wingo, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm telling you, I'm not betting against Rachel. She's going to wake up in the middle of the night.
I need updates on this puzzle now. I'm invested.
Without question. I'd like to see who all the villainesses are, too. I'd like to know who
there's
they all are.
There's some powerhouses in there.
There is.
I mean, you go back to, like, the Cruella de Vil days.
Well, and I got to believe the Cruella de Vil, that's got to be the easier one with the hair, right? I mean, you got to be able to tell those pieces of her hair.
So you've got Cruella de Vil. You've got who's the one from The Little Mermaid? What's her name?
I don't know her name.
We'd have to go. We gotta find out from her. Again, we'll
is Maleficent a is that Disney movie? Is Maleficent a Disney movie?
Yes,
would
Maleficent
she be in that
is
one?
A Disney movie.
So I she would. So. I mean, so she would probably be in that one. I don't know her name because I haven't seen that movie yet. But Disney Plus and stuff.
But how about her with the false sense of security of doing the kid puzzles and all of a sudden getting an adult one and just getting hammered?
There's a different, like, man, there's levels to this puzzle game, man. You know, this mom's into puzzles. Like, those things will humble you quickly.
We are, listen, she's got 13 days to finish it. So we got to find out what's going on with this puzzle.
Speaking of getting hammered after yesterday's news, I think I'm going to spend the next 10 years just getting hammered on Sundays. Coming up, why the biggest comparison to the Chiefs dynasty could be an NBA team. We'll tell you next. Yes, go, man.
Yeah.
It's Golic and Wingo.
All right, hold on. I need that one isolated because best believe we're running it back. New bleep, new bleep, new bleep. Golic and Wingo's brought to you by 303 Touchless Sealant. Don't have time to wax your car. 303 Touchless Sealant is quick and easier solution. Simply spray on and rinse off. It's that easy. Get ultimate protection and shine in minutes that lasts up to 6 months. At O'Reilly, AutoZone, and Advanced Auto Parts, visit 303radio.com. for more info.
That was awesome.
Woo!
The name of the show is Golic and Wingo. Yeah. I do know that. I'm Jason. It's amazing that I got the rest of the tease in and then not the name of the show.
Can we play that one more time, please?
Yeah, great. Coming up, why the biggest comparison to the Chiefs dynasty could be an NBA team. We'll tell you next. Yes, go, man.
Yeah.
It's Golic and Wingo.
I you punted so quickly because it was a hard out. You had to.
So for anyone like behind the peek behind the curtain, somebody in my ear is counting 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and to help me because you know I have to get out in an exact time. And as I attempted to do that, I
stepped all over yourself.
What were you trying to say?
I was trying to say next on Golic and Wingo, but I just skipped the Golic and Wingo and started to say ESPN Radio. And then I was like, no, I got to say the name of the show. So it was like ESPN Go. And then I realized I didn't have time.
Coming up,
why the biggest comparison to the Chiefs dynasty could be an NBA team. We'll tell you next. ESPN Go. Man.
Yeah.
It's Golic and Wingo.
I started ESPN Radio and realized I needed to switch gears to Golic and Wingo, then realized I had no time.
You don't have to say the name of the show anymore.
Well, you know, I do for 13 more days.
By the way, Rachel Nichols said she's in the bubble doing the puzzle of the Disney villainesses. I can't even say the word right.
Villainesses. Yeah, villainesses. Which is a great word in its own right that I didn't know existed until 9:20 this morning.
What I didn't know, there are 10 female villains in the Disney movie franchise. And in this, she sent you a picture of the puzzle, not completed because she hasn't done it, but of the box. And there are 6 in there,
so
correct?
The puzzle that Rachel chose has 6 of the Disney villainesses on it.
6 of the 10.
Right now, 6 of the 10 on here. And what I can make out so far is the ones we talked about. Maleficent, which as everyone on Twitter pointed out to me, her name is Maleficent. Got it. All right. My bad, y'all.
Yeah, all right.
Leave me alone. Second one was Ursula from The Little Mermaid, the one that we were debating at before the break, and Cruella de Vil from 101 Dalmatians.
Right.
There are 3 more, including a witch holding an apple, which I can't. Well, so it's got to be Snow White. I don't remember her name from Snow White. So there's that one. And then I'm not going to lie, these 2 others, one of them I remember because she's got a crown. She looks kind of imposing. There's an old woman on here. I have no idea what movie she's from.
Really?
No idea. I mean, this is great radio right now. I'm showing Jason a picture of this woman. I have no idea what movie she's from. No idea who that woman is.
Yeah, I got
no
nothing.
Clue. So Rachel is dealing with a puzzle that is already outside of our means to just even name, let alone put together, which we know she mentioned she's having difficulty with.
If there's any one thing I'm sure of is that the rest of the afternoon we could spend watching Disney Plus, where all of these movies are available, and you could just get out there, log in, and see the entire catalog.
From Snow White, it's the Evil Queen.
That's her name?
So the 10 that have been
we
got to that point and it's just like, we got her listed as stock character Evil Queen. We named our cat Kitty, so I can't talk about anything.
The Evil Queen,
Maleficent?
Maleficent. Ursula, Cruella de Vil, Madame Medusa, the Queen of Hearts, Madame Mim. Yzma, I guess. Y-Z-M-A. Lady Tremaine and Mother Gothel are the 10 villains.
This has to be the queen. Is this the Queen of Hearts?
I don't
see.
Is there a heart? Then it's
I remember the Queen of Hearts from the live action version of Alice in Wonderland, where it's Helen Bonham Carter with the giant head. So a little different than the cartoon
animated
one we're dealing with right here.
All right, so that's what Rachel's working on, and by the way, she's struggling mightily.
Yeah.
Speaking of villains, Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio.
He's a villain to you, huh?
The Chiefs are going to be a villain to me. Although Junior pointed out earlier, properly. I mean, right now it feels like this dynasty we're sitting on the precipice of is incredibly beloved. I'm trying to find some reason to have hope for like the next, I don't know, 6 years at this point. It is tough looking at how good the Chiefs
are. You can't. The two big signings we talked about, Myles Garrett, the richest deal for any non-quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, and Chris Jones, the interior D lineman, signed that $80 million deal, 60 guaranteed. So, and they signed Patrick Mahomes in order the 10-year extension. So this is what your Super Bowl championship team is coming back with that they have. 20 of the 22 Super Bowl starters are returning. The entire coaching staff is intact. 5 of the top 6 rushers, 8 of the 9 top receivers, 6 of the top 7 offensive linemen. And, oh, by the way, they picked up Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the draft. So they are stacked. It truly is the Chiefs in the field, like way back when it was Tiger Woods in the field.
Jason, you know what? I know you for a while you were a dry household. I have a feeling for your own well-being, maybe just break the mold on that
I got nothing at this point. I just got to hope the rest of the AFC West doesn't mail it in like the AFC East did for a generation. That's my only hope, is that somehow we manage to resist that. Thursday on Golic and Wingo, book it. Ryan Clark, Dan Graziano, and Tiger without
four,
the raw.
Three,
thanks for hanging out with us. I'll learn how to read today.